This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Couch Potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today, the new movies are The Circle, How to Be a Latin Lover, Slight, Blow Her Mouth, and My Entire High School Sinking into the Sea. Now, that's a mouthful. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and, of course, the home cinema roundup with a spotlight on M. Night Shyamalan's Split. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Two pieces of sad news this week. We, of course, have the rest in peace for Aaron Moran, best known for playing Joni Cunningham on, well, originally Happy Days, and then Joni Loves Chachi, the very brief, absurd spinoff that was really quite terrible in the 80s, but it just reeks of 80s-ness to it. Joni Loves Chachi was sort of always held up as the terrible spinoff, and which is funny because Happy Days, you know, they had Mork and Mindy, they had Laverne and Shirley. It was kind of this spinoff machine, and Joni Loves Chachi's kind of crashed and burned. But that's because nobody cared about that character. Joni was the least of the characters to spin off from Happy Days, but she was 56 and she lived in Indiana, had fallen on hard times lately and had her struggles and her problems. But there was a question of why she died, but it turned out that she had like stage 4 cancer. And that was the complications from that, probably not terribly well treated because she had been on hard times. Some people had speculated that she was bankrupt and had no money. And of course, there was all these legal wranglings with their likeness and the use of them. I mean, Ron Howard wasn't as involved in this or Henry Winkler, the stars of the show, but people like Anson Williams and Donnie Most and the people who are the smaller, more supporting characters and actors were struggling for that. So it's sad. I mean, 56, that's pretty young to go. But like I said, cancer. Cancer also took Jonathan Demme from us this week. He was 73 and he died from complications to esophageal cancer. Cancer's a tough nut, man. I mean, that goes after a lot of people, and it's so widespread because there's so many different types. It's not like pneumonia. There's you know, only certain types of pneumonia, but cancer, I mean, it can affect bone, brain, lungs, liver. I mean, all these different parts of your body. And so, yeah, Jonathan Demme, Oscar-winning director of Silence of the Lambs, and kind of this style chameleon. And that was probably the most impressive thing about Jonathan Demme as a director. He didn't stick to one type of film. And it wasn't even like, you know, Steven Spielberg can do drama and he did, you know, of course, adventure and action and even sort of like a kids movie with E.T. Jonathan Demme was not defined as his specific style. He did various types, you know, horror, drama, comedy. He really was a bit of a chameleon director. And so that's sad to see him go. Moving on to some more fun news, I guess you can say. We've got release dates official for Star Wars 9, due out Memorial Day weekend, May 23rd, 2019. So they might be shifting around to see whether the release date works better for Memorial Day, going back to the traditional release date for Star Wars movies. And then Indiana Jones 5, which will star Harrison Ford at 186 years old, is due on July 10th, 2020. Of course, Harrison Ford still reaping the profits from all the characters that he built in the 70s and 80s. Another couple pieces of development news. David Fincher has signed on to direct World War Z. In this day and age, you know, you can take place in China and call it World War Z and have the president of China maybe become a zombie. But anyways, yeah, this is an interesting switch because, you know, this is the first sequel he'll have done, like, for somebody else's movie since Alien 3. Which was, of course, his premiere film. It just does not seem like the kind of thing that Fincher would go for because he usually does these more auteur versions. But, you know, I'm interested now. I'm curious to see what he does going from like Social Network and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo to doing a sequel for World War Z. And then finally, the other big piece of development news that kind of set everybody on fire this week is M. Night Shyamalan has announced that he's doing his sequel to Split, which we're going to be talking about later as a Blu-ray spotlight. He is doing a sequel called Glass, which of course brings the characters from Unbreakable into this world and sort of merges the two films, which is, it's hilarious because just a couple movies ago, M. Night Shyamalan was considered really on the skids. I mean, after movies like The Last Airbender and After Earth, he had to go back to the well, and he did The Visit, which was okay, but it was found footage and that cobbled that film. But that did okay. And then, of course, Split was a bit of a hit, especially because it cost very little money, just a couple million dollars to make. And now he's branching that out, and people are very excited. Suddenly people are excited about an M. Night Shyamalan movie again. I have to go back and revisit Unbreakable because I didn't particularly like it when I first saw it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to hit is one that people have been highly anticipating, and that is Kingsman: The Golden Circle opens on September 22nd.
Eggsy, I saw in you what someone once saw in me. Something that can't be taught. The makings of a Kingsman. Being a Kingsman is more than the clothing we wear or the weapons we bear. It's about being willing to sacrifice for the greater good. I hope you're ready for what comes next.
I was a moderate fan of the first Kingsman. I liked the idea. I liked sort of this play off of, you know, MI6 and the Gentleman Spy, the James Bond references. I like that. I love the James Bond movies. Huge fan of those. I was not a fan of the church scene that a lot of people go completely bonkers over and say is one of the greatest scenes in modern cinema in terms of fight scenes. I thought it was a little overdone. There are parts of the Kingsman that I liked. I mean, I thought it was a neat idea, but I thought it kind of went at times, you know, marginally offensive. And I'm not some brittle snowflake who gets offended at things, but I'm like, yeah, that's kind of in bad taste. And it also takes the story a little too far, and it doesn't know whether it's trying to be a satire of the genre or be a serious story about a person's change. And I think it didn't quite walk that line properly. But this one looks like it might be fun. It looks like it's going to be exciting. It looks like there's going to be plenty of action to it. It does look like it's falling into some sequel elements to it. Just watch the trailer and you're going to see its action clips for, you know, after that narration. It looks like it's treading some familiar ground. But hey, it might be fun for a September release. The next one I want to talk about is The Beguiled, which actually opens earlier this summer on June 23rd.
You're a most unwelcome visitor, and we do not propose to entertain you.
You'll find them easily amused.
You won't be here long enough for that.
It seems the enemy is not what we believe.
I hope you like apple pie. Can I get you anything?
Give me the key.
You know I'd get in trouble for that.
Oh, what have you done to me?
Now, this is directed by Sofia Coppola, who blows hot and cold for me. I've seen some of her movies that I've really liked. Like, I thought that Lost in Translation was a really interesting movie. I absolutely loved The Bling Ring. But, like, movies like Somewhere I thought was boring, and I absolutely hated Marie Antoinette. So she sometimes does a great job, in my opinion, and sometimes not so much. This is another attempt to make the book that Clint Eastwood made in the 70s. It's about, of course, a Civil War soldier who comes across a house of women and obfuscates his past and maybe becomes a bit of an antagonist. Now, if you know how that movie ends, the original, you may not want to watch the trailer because they do give certain things away, which should be from the end of the movie, if I recall the original film. So it looks interesting. It looks like it's going to be a little more intense and emotion-filled than a typical Sofia Coppola movie, which would be interesting to see. I'd like to see her branch out and do something a little more visceral, which could be this, but it could also be a long, unsightly bore. We don't know. She's done it before. So that one comes out June 23rd. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the movies that weren't screened and I didn't get a chance to see, but I will talk about How to Be a Latin Lover and slight.
Because we can!
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We are jumping into another week of marginally screened films. And part of the reason for this is, I explained last week, it's the same deal. A couple weeks ago we had Fate of the Furious come out, and that was a huge movie, made almost $100 million this opening weekend. It's still going strong. I mean, it's going into this weekend with close to $800 million overseas. It's a juggernaut, especially in the international market, but also in the American market too. It's nothing to sneeze at. Next week, we got Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which opens internationally this weekend. So we get this weird overlap, and Hollywood is saying, hey, let's only put smaller movies in this point because we're going to dilute the marketplace. And we can't have too many tentpoles coming out against each other, because even though the studios don't care, I mean, Universal doesn't care if Disney makes money on their movie, but they realize too many movies of the same type are going to compete with each other. So having 3 weeks between Fate of the Furious and Guardians of the Galaxy actually does both films well, does both studios well. And in the international market, they're going to roll right off of Fate of the Furious into Guardians of the Galaxy this weekend. We got to wait till next week for us to see it here in the States. So they're dropping a bunch of smaller movies, and these movies oftentimes don't get screened. Now, both of these, How to Be a Latin Lover and Slight, have reasons, I think, why they're not screened. So they could be a good movie, but you never know. When they don't screen a movie, it's oftentimes can be a bad sign. Now, How to Be a Latin Lover stars Eugenio Derbez, who is, and I'm probably butchered that, and my apologies to anybody who, I'm not used to saying his name. So my apologies, Eugenio, I think is how you say his name. But he was a star of Instructions Not Included, which was kind of this big hit a couple years ago, and it was completely directed at the Spanish language market. And there's a lot of Spanish language speaking immigrants in America. A lot of people who either they're immigrants themselves and maybe they don't speak English or don't speak a lot of English, or just families who are bilingual. You got kids who speak both Spanish and English. And so it's aimed for that market, and it made like $44 million, which isn't a huge, I mean, we're not talking like $500 million. It's not like Beauty and the Beast this year, but $44 million for a Spanish language movie is actually kind of impressive, and it shows that there's certainly a market there. Now, he's a very big star in the Spanish language market, and even in America, you see him show up in other things. He was in that TV show Rob Schneider did a couple years ago called Rob with the exclamation point. He was in that. So you see him show up always in supporting roles in American movies. But he's a name, and he's a bankable name in the Spanish language market. In this, he plays a trophy husband who's dumped by his 80-year-old sugar mama and must become hot and sexy again to get a new meal ticket.
My papa always said,
"Hi, Massimo.
You get what you work for." And I knew how to work it better than anyone. Peggy dumped me. I have no money, no home.
You could always try staying at your sister's.
I am trusting you with my car, and I am trusting you with my son.
Wait.
Friend of yours?
She doesn't even know I exist.
I can teach you how to use your skills of seduction to get what you want.
When do we start?
This actually looks funny. I don't know if I'd pay full price for it. You know, it's directed by Ken Marino, who was in The State, the TV show. He's been in a lot of other things. Anything with the people from The State, like stuff that David Wayne directs. He was in Children's Hospital, the weird kind of off-kilter TV show on Adult Swim. He hasn't done a lot of directing, but he's done a lot of acting. You'll recognize him. But it looks like it's funny, and looks like they're trying to move Derbez into a sort of like a mainstream American comedian standpoint, because you've got some recognizable faces and names. You've got Kristen Bell in the movie. You've got Salma Hayek. You've got Raquel Welch in this film. You got Rob Lowe. So they've brought in some of these American stars with recognizable faces and names that might bring in the English language market as well as the Spanish language market. With that said, I didn't get a chance to see it, and I don't know much about being a Latin lover. I mean, you take me, put me in a Speedo, and with my Irish skin, I go outside and I glow until I turn into a lobster. So I don't know anything about being a Latin lover, aside from what I read on the internet, you know, on my phone in the dark alone. But it looks like it could be funny, but it wasn't screened. So it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to quickly talk about is Slight. A street magician must use his real powers to save his family after being caught up in a life of crime.
My dad passed a while back and my mom passed last year. It's just me and my little sister Tina. It's love of my life. This is turning into something I would have never signed up for. I never thought it'd get dangerous. I just wish I could move Tina to a neighborhood with a better school, surrounded with better people.
I gave you a job when you needed it most.
I'm gonna kill you and every person you know.
I can do something no one else can.
Oh my God.
This is sort of an urban version of a superhero origin story at a very low budget. Reminds me a little bit of Chronicle. Only it's not found footage, which is a huge step in the right direction. Because the part of the reason I hated Chronicle with a passion was Chronicle was found footage. And it cobbled the story. And I know people liked that movie, but it was terrible, in my opinion, because of that. Also, the problem that I had with Chronicle is no one ever thought to be a superhero. At least at this point, it looks like, from the trailer, it looks like the kid's like trying to use his powers, what power he has. He apparently has like real power that he uses for street magic, but he then needs to use it to save his family. He's actually doing something heroic with it, which I think is interesting because the characters in Chronicle just kind of squandered it on like a talent show. It was dumb. But Slight looks like it could be interesting, and it's gotten some decent reviews at festivals where it's been at, and I've seen some decent reviews of it. However, you might say that it's in only 500 theaters and that's why it wasn't screened. I think that if it wasn't screened because it's just not getting the traction. It's not uncommon to see something kind of be a bit of a hit at a film festival and then really not go anywhere. A great example was the movie Buried with Ryan Reynolds a couple years ago. It was like 5 or 6, 7 years ago. Ryan Reynolds played a guy who was buried alive in a coffin. The entire movie takes place in the coffin. And he has a cell phone. He's trying to call people because he can still get signal. He's been put in there by somebody. He doesn't know why. And that was, it was an interesting movie. I remember seeing it and it was a huge hit at, I think, Sundance. And it had a bidding war and it was released and nobody saw it. It's not uncommon for that to happen, for a movie to get a lot of traction at Sundance. In fact, I would go as far to say if a movie gets a lot of traction at a film festival, it may go nowhere. Unless it's something that's for a very limited, smaller market. You know, something like Your Next was a festival film. And I loved Your Next. And you talk to people in the horror genre and they tend to love Your Next. It did not do well in the mainstream. In fact, it did colossally poorly in the mainstream. I remember seeing my screening of Your Next. I think I was the only one in the theater who got it. I'm laughing. I'm having a great time. Everybody else is horrified at this movie and think it's in bad taste. And I'm like, no, you don't get it. They're deconstructing the genre. Cabin in the Woods was the same way. It didn't get the big bump in the mainstream. So festival favorites tend not to be big hits. And I have a feeling that's what we're going to get with Slight. While I'm intrigued by the story and while I like the idea of it, it does kind of feel like it's like a been there, done that with found footage, but they're just doing it without found footage. Cause it reminds me a little bit of, oh, that was that movie. I can't remember the name of it. It was this movie about people who figured out how to do time travel. And it was like an early January and it was a found footage movie. You see this sort of thing and it would have been found footage, but the found footage genre is dying. So, but it still doesn't seem to be getting any traction. So I, you know, they didn't screen it. So it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about movies I did see. The Circle and Below Her Mouth.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the films that I had a chance to check out. The first movie that I got a chance to see, and this was also not screened, by the way. I think it's worth saying, because I think they screened it probably in bigger markets. Columbus is weird, because Columbus is a significant market. And in fact, in a lot of ways, Columbus is bigger than Cleveland. The problem is, the way they count the market in movie theaters is they do it by the number of seats, movie theater seats, within the city. And in Columbus, most of our screens are actually outside of the city limits of Columbus. They're in the suburbs. So sometimes we get passed over, but I don't even think this was screened in anywhere in Ohio. Not that I heard of. It's released by a smaller company, STX, but they got me a screener of their finest from last week, and they've shown other movies. So that was a little bit of a bad sign. And after seeing the movie, I can see why. But The Circle. After getting a job in a trendy and powerful tech company, a young woman finds herself in the middle of a battle for privacy.
I am a believer in the perfectibility of human beings.
You got the job at The Circle.
Have a drink, have a good time, and stay excited. You're at The Circle.
So, May, do you think you behave better or worse when you are being watched?
We have cameras in place all over the world right now.
Watching you.
I didn't create this. This is not what I had in mind.
Watching you.
Things at The Circle, they need to change.
Now, the biggest thing this has going for it is the stars. You've got Emma Watson, who's high off of doing Beauty and the Beast. I mean, that's the biggest. I mean, forget Harry Potter. Beauty and the Beast is the biggest hit of her career. I mean, it's been like, it's almost $500 million in the U.S., which is kind of unreal, actually. You also have Tom Hanks, who, you know, look, he's done a lot of great movies. He has, but he's also done some garbage. Nobody remembers The Man with One Red Shoe. I mean, that he's done some terrible movies in the past, but he's also done some great stuff. But he's great at everything he does. Even in a terrible movie, Tom Hanks is fun to watch. And I will say this. I won't tell you what it is, but Tom Hanks has one of the best line reads in this movie that you'll ever hear. And it's not a terribly original line, but boy, does it come off as hilarious. And maybe I'm the only one who thought it was funny. I laughed out loud in the theater at that one. But while it has that good cast, and it's got other people like Patton Oswalt in it, it's got the kid from Boyhood. Of course, I'm talking about L.R. Coltrane. And boy, is he terrible in this movie. I mean, like, really bad. And this kid was getting nominations for Boyhood. But boy, in this movie, he is awful. I mean, just embarrassingly bad. He is so bad in this movie that he literally drags down Emma Watson as an actress in this film. Now, the other problem with it in terms of acting is exactly what I've said about Emma Watson. There's not a lot of depth to her acting. I mean, she's a good actor and she has a great presence. But I have yet to see her given something that really makes her stretch, that really makes her challenge herself as an actor. Beauty and the Beast, she was fine in, but she just kind of went through the motions. She just had to be pretty and play the very standard Disney princess. I have yet to see her do something that really gets her to dig deep into the emotions. Like I mentioned earlier, I like the Bling Ring. She was in the Bling Ring, but part of the reason that she worked so well in the Bling Ring is she was sort of this aloof, disconnected, pretty rich girl. I think she needs to do something a little more daring. She really needs to strip down her emotion and her safety net and get elbow deep in the character, which I think Daniel Radcliffe has done and done some crazy stuff. But I think Emma Watson hasn't quite achieved that. And then she certainly doesn't achieve it in this movie. This film, it's a cautionary tale. It's based on a book. And in a lot of ways, it's trying to say, hey, you know, watch out for social media and security. And I guess it takes place in like a not too distant future. So it's sort of like the technology is beyond what we have now, but it's where the technology is going. And maybe it's a precursor to what a dystopian society would be. The problem with this movie is about halfway through, it completely collapses under terrible dialogue and some really terrible acting. And it never quite recovers from that. And then it goes into absurd and preposterous moments. There are things that are suggested in terms of what they want to do with this technology that even I sat there and I'm like, I don't know if that would even be remotely possible. That would be too many hoops to jump through. Like a great example is at one point they talk about using their technology, their social network, which has 240 some million people in it in America. And they want to use that to register people to vote and then require people to vote in elections. And I'm like, you could never do that. There'd be just no path to that in government or business, at least for 50, 60, 70 years at minimum. And even then, I don't think that that would be possible. It's just the way our country is. You'd have to get rid of people. I'd have to be gone, long gone. You have to get people who've lived completely under the umbrella of social media to even remotely achieve that. And even now I'm reading articles I was reading an article this week about how teens are backing off of Facebook. Teens are retreating. You know, the youngest people who drive these social media applications are backing off of it because of the bullying, because of the anonymity. And they're talking about how this is so secure, but it's really not. So this feels like it was written by your grandmother trying to warn you about the internet at Thanksgiving dinner. So I don't know. There's just elements of it that are decent. It makes an okay thriller, but yeah, I wouldn't pay full price, but otherwise it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about really quickly is Below Her Mouth. A lesbian, afraid of commitment, embarks upon a new relationship with a fashion editor.
You didn't say goodbye last night.
I'll be here until dark and you never see me again.
One drink.
Take me somewhere.
You okay, sweetie? Did you call the planner about booking the wedding?
I haven't had time. I don't want to think about my life. I've never done anything like this before. I need to end this.
Why were you never like that with me?
One of the notable things, and you find this out, if you search this movie on the internet, you're going to see a lot of mentions of the fact that the entire crew, the people who made this movie, were all women. And that's great. I support female filmmakers. I think that's wonderful. I think there should be more of them. We need more female directors. I think we need to, in Hollywood, for as much as it preaches about equality, it's not a very equal business. With that said, just because women worked on the movie does not mean it's going to be good. There's plenty of movies that men make that are garbage, and there's the complete possibility for a movie that women make to not be very good. This is trying to break taboos. But once you had a movie like Blue's the Warmest Color, which came out about 4 years ago and was this French movie about a lesbian girl coming to an awakening and dealing with that, that thing was a very intense, very complex emotional journey. I felt it really captured an awakening of a woman. This one just feels like a cliche. In a lot of ways, it almost plays as softcore pornography. There's a lot of sex in it, and there's a lot of nudity in it. But for as much as it's trying to be progressive and trying to be like, oh, we're going to rise above it, it still has the female gaze. When the women are doing things and they're naked or, you know, having an intimate moment, the camera just drinks them in like it was directed by some horny guy. And it doesn't rise above the Skinamax softcore pornography feel that it has. And that's not me being a prude. That's just me looking at this going, I could get this on many different sources. This doesn't feel unique, and it doesn't feel real. On top of it, all the characters are gorgeous. So you don't get a real, you know, there's no awkwardness to them. The lesbian who's afraid of commitment, she's a Swedish actress, but she channels Kristen Stewart, and she basically plays the guy in a movie who's a commitment phobe. So there's no depth to her character beyond what you see in other movies. There's a blip of redemption at one point at the ending, but then it squanders it away. And this movie, it's not very good. It means well, and it would have been daring in the 90s, but now, I don't know. It just, The characters, there's no relationship to it. There's nothing, there's no depth to the characters. They're completely shallow and there's nothing to them. So I have to say that Blow Her Mouth kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be reviewing my entire high school sinking into the sea, the weekly box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Split. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr for the final segment of the show. One more movie to review, and that is My Entire High School Sinking into the Sea. This hyper-real animated film puts teen angst into the disaster film format as students try to escape their high school set adrift by a small earthquake.
The world's a barren and horrible place, isn't it? These kids are the only hope left.
Sophomores now. We're like entirely new people.
First edition of the year.
All the news that's fit
to
off the press.
There's not much to write about at Tides High. We're a peaceful, uneventful place.
Attention, everyone! Pencils down!
The reason I'm reviewing this is this actually opens in my town, hometown of Columbus, Ohio, at the Gateway Film Center. It's elsewhere. It's playing around. I bet you can probably find it on demand. It's a fringe movie. It's a different film. It's an independent movie and it's animated, but it's not animated in the sense that, say, Moana was animated or even like a Cell animated movie. This is done very stylized. It kind of looks like one of those independent cartoons that you find on the internet, like Cyanide and Happiness with a little more detail to them. And it's a choppy animation style with backgrounds and some effects, but it's somewhat rustic. So I think it's a neat animation style, and it's a short movie. It's like 75 minutes long. So, you know, you're not dealing with a marathon commitment to it. And it has some neat voices to it. It's got like Jason Schwartzman plays the lead character. Reggie Watts plays his best friend and their writers at a school newspaper. You've got like Susan Sarandon playing the lunch lady. You've got some recognizable voices, but they're very appropriate for the roles. Like Jason Schwartzman, he's like, what, is in his 40s now? But he still works as sort of like this high school kid. You can still feel him as the kid from Rushmore. The best way I can describe this movie is it's essentially the Poseidon Adventure, only it takes place in a high school instead of a cruise ship. And instead of having to escape the cruise ship after it flips over because of a tidal wave, what happens is the building is built on a fault line. And it's unstable, and a good earthquake could break it off, and it falls into the sea. And slowly, the water's rising through the different floors. And each floor is a different year in high school. So it's this, it literally takes place in a high school, and that's symbolic of going through high school, of having to claw your way up and fight your way and survive to get to the top and graduate. So it's basically, the cruise ship is a high school, and it's a big symbol for it. It's weird, and it's very hyper-real, but you don't really know if what's happening is in fact real or if it's a recollection of, a hyper-recollection of what's happening. But it has a real interesting deconstruction of high school angst and the high school politics and the power structure of high school, not just in the administration, but the social structure of the school, and it can have some shocking moments, but it's very bizarre, but it's very interesting. I have to say that My Entire High School Sinking into the Sea rocks for no other reason than it's unlike anything you're going to see this year.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said that Fate of the Furious was going to make about $45 million. It actually didn't do as well. It's still a big hit, but it dropped considerably. It dropped over 60%, which isn't a great hold. And considering the fact that the first weekend was almost $100 million, but it was lower than the expected $120 million or so that people were predicting, that shows that I think the franchise is waning a bit. In the U.S., that is. It's at $800 million going into this weekend on overseas alone. It's going into this weekend with almost $1 billion worldwide. So this series is going to continue on, and it might in the 9th and 10th episode, it might only make $100-$120 million in the States, but it's still going strong overseas. It's like Triple X. If you go back and you look at the yearly box office, and this, of course, before we get all the summer movies and, of course, the Star Wars movie coming at the end of the year, right now, as it sits from a worldwide perspective, one of the highest grossing movies of the year at number 8 is Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage, which did not do very well domestically. It only made $45 million domestically, but it made $300 million overseas. Vin Diesel's an overseas box office hit. And that is what saves his career. And you might see Triple X continue with movies and Fast and the Furious continue with movies and just not have a really good box office in America. And I think that the box office is reflecting that. And then, like, Born in China was the highest of the newcomers, just barely beating out Unforgettable. And the thing is, Unforgettable made half of what people were expecting. That's a terrible show for Katherine Heigl. Not good. The Promise made about $4 million, and then Phoenix Forgotten didn't even get in the top 10 with less than 2. This week, I think Fast and Furious is going to win again because I don't think anything else is strong enough. But I think it's going to be under $20 million. It dropped 61% last weekend. I think it's going to drop another 60% this weekend. People are saving their money getting ready to go see Guardians of the Galaxy. So Latin Lover, that could do up to $10 million. I mean, the instructions not included opened with like 7. I wouldn't be surprised if the Spanish language market moves that up to close to $10 million. The Circle is, people are saying it might be $15 million or more. I think it's going to be 10 to 15. It'll be lucky to make 10. I just don't think it's got the buzz behind it, and it's going to be very front-loaded. I don't think it's going to have good word of mouth. But the one that's going to have, is one I didn't even talk about, one that's going to have some good show, is Bahubali 2, The Conclusion, which is a sequel to an Indian film from 2015 that was a huge hit. I mean, nobody in the English language mainstream American audience is aware of this, but it was a huge international hit, big with Indian audiences. And there's a huge Indian audience in America. There's a theater I go to near where I live that always has Indian movies, and they do very well. And there's a large Indian population, especially in this area, and they'll go see them. And the Indians as a culture love movies. And it's in like 500 theaters. It's almost in as many theaters as Slight this weekend. So look for a strong showing there. And even though it's almost 3 hours, that may be in the top 5 this week. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's finally time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The movie that gets the spotlight this week is Split, which came out last week on DVD and Blu-ray. And the reason it's important to talk about this week is because not only is it relatively new to Blu-ray and DVD, but you have the fact that M. Night Shyamalan's making the sequel, Glass, which is going to tie it into his film Unbreakable from, 17 years ago? And the story is about a man with multiple personalities who kidnaps 3 girls and holds them captive with unknown plans.
I've never seen a case like this before. 23 identities live in Kevin's body. Did something happen? The human brain is the most complex object in the universe.
The only way we're getting out of here is if one of them decides to let us out.
Now, I got a chance to rewatch this, and you know what holds up? Knowing where it goes and knowing what it doesn't have in it it helps me like the movie a little bit better. Part of the reason to see this movie is for the performance of James McAvoy. He actually does a really good job with some nuance. And he's being remembered, and this is getting a fonder remembrance, at least this year. I'd like to see James McAvoy get a little bit of recognition at the end of the year for his performance. I mean, it's not the most sensitive to people with dissociative identity disorder, but it's a very good performance, and I'd like to see him get some recognition for that. It still works as sort of like a thriller. I never understand why the girls never take the hinges off the door, even though they're right there. But oh well, I wasn't stuck in that room. The DVD and Blu-ray has some decent bonus features. The biggest thing that's kind of worth seeing is, of course, the alternate ending and the deleted scenes. And the reason I like those is even though they're oftentimes reason they're deleted or reasons that they're changed, it's neat to see what could have been. And I find those to be very interesting. Now, those also have an introduction from M. Night Shyamalan. And there's also a general making of documentary of it. There's a feature on James McAvoy and the different roles that he plays within one character. And then, of course, because it's M. Night Shyamalan and the guy's an egoist, there's a spotlight on him and his vision. So if you can absorb that much M. Night Shyamalan ego, you can enjoy all of the special features on it. But yeah, Split, I'm going to have to say, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
A couple other movies that are coming to disc this week. We have La La Land, the not Best Picture winner, Underworld Blood Wars. And of course, if you follow the Marine franchise, which started in cinemas and is now completely living on DVD and then was dumped off of Fox, and it's, I think Sony's doing them now, and the Marine 5 is out. And that is it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, but now it's time for me to go. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.